Dear Catholic friends, yes, the topic of this lecture is the situation of the Catholics during the persecution time in the former Soviet Union. And I will tell you then and explain by which way I'm connected with this topic. You will understand then later. But let me first explain how the Catholics came to Russia. You know, Russia was originally completely Catholic when they became Christians in the 10th century. In the end, Russia was baptized in 988, and it was Catholic. The schism didn't exist in that time, and there were a union with Rome, with the Holy See in Rome, of course. And then we know all from the history of the Church, the schism in 1054 took place, and Russia became schismatic, or the Russian Orthodox Church, independent of Rome, and was not more connected with the Holy See. But you know, I presume every large country has influence, wants to expand. We don't want to count now these countries, it's not the topic. But Russia had the interest to expand, and so many other people, they became a part of Russia, of the Russian Empire. You know, the Tsar, the Emperor, the Russian Emperor, in Russian called Tsar. And so Russia expanded and became, do you know, a neighbor of United States of America. You know, on the other side of Alaska is Russia. But so it means what I want to say, that not only a few, but many different people and nations, they became, or the area where they live, became a part of the Russian Empire. And so the influence from Moscow, or originally from Moscow and then later from St. Petersburg, grew and grew up. And so also some countries became a part of the Russian Empire. They had Catholic population, and they kept Catholic. They didn't become Orthodox, as we say. So, for instance, Ukraine, or White Russia, Belarus, or the Baltic countries, Lithuania, Estonia, and what's the name of the other one? Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia. And there, especially in Lithuania and in Ukraine, there was a big part. Lithuania was completely Catholic one good day in the past. And so the Catholics, they became citizens first of the Russian Empire, and then also of Soviet Union. You know, the October Revolution in 1917. And in the Tsar time, in the time of the Empire, of the Russian Empire, the persecution of the Catholics took place partly, especially the Catholics of the Eastern Rite, the so-called Uniates, they had to feel that. But it's we should understand where it came from. The Russian Orthodox Church had the opinion that they are the only representative of the Eastern Rite, Byzantine Eastern Rite, as a mass of the Byzantine Rite. And the Eastern Catholics, or the Ukrainian Greek Catholics, they were Catholic, but they had the same mass, the same sacraments, the same rite in the Slavonic, in the old Slavonic language. And so they got to feel the power of the emperor and of the Russian Empire. As I said, many Catholics became lived there in the territory of the Russian Empire. And there was also a special case, you know, since the Emperor Peter the Great, Peter the First, he tried to adopt Western customs, and there were craftsmen, they were invited from Holland, from Germany. There was one part in Moscow where all the foreign workers, they lived there. And so some number of Catholics, they moved to Moscow, especially to Moscow, because they were craftsmen and the emperor, he invited them. But then, especially in the middle of the 18th century, the first wave of people from Germany moved to the territory of the Russian Empire. First, they moved in the 750s, 760s, to the area of Volga River. Volga is the famous Russian river. And they had German colonies. But a part of these German colonists were Catholic too, of course. And they had their own villages. They were completely German. And one village was completely Lutheran. The other one was completely Catholic. But so the Catholics, they came to Russia, and then about 200 years ago, another wave of Catholics came and they settled in south of Ukraine. They were of the Roman Rite, as we are, and so my ancestors, they did belong to the second wave. They settled in south Ukraine, and they had their German customs, and to the custom of this people did belong also the Catholic faith, of course. And they had own priests. First they came from Germany, then from Poland or from Lithuania or other countries. But then when the diocese in the middle of the 19th century was established by Rome, the Diocese of Saratov, they had a priest seminary there where their own clergy got the education and the training, spiritual training, and studied the theology and other disciplines and became then priests. But then they lived more or less without big troubles and problems concerning the religion. But we know that October Revolution in 1917 changed the history of the country completely. And the first time it was not so hard, the persecution, but since the late 20s, and especially when Stalin began to make a big cleaning, so-called cleaning, so also the religion was persecuted. Not only the Catholic religion, all the religions. Also the Russians, the Orthodox people were persecuted. They tried to kill the religion. And so many priests from these German villages, where was the majority of the Catholics, they were exiled, banished to the Asian part of Soviet Union, in that time Soviet Union. And I have a book here with me in the rectory. It's so emotional when I read there the names of the priests, many of them with pictures. And there was mentioned, yeah, he was banished to Siberia. He was killed in 1934, 1935. The majority was killed. But some priests, they survived, and they were sent to the Asian part of Soviet Union. If you know geography, you can now imagine. And especially when World War II began, Yes, the Germans, they came, the Wehrmacht came, but before the people on the Volga River in Russia, these Germans, these Catholics, they were exiled and banished at first. This was the first group. They have not been occupied. This territory was not occupied by the Wehrmacht. But then when the Wehrmacht, I have heard it from my grandmother, she was born 1911, and she said, also my father, born 1934, he has some remembrance. When the Germans, they came, the Wehrmacht, I mean, they got free. They could go to church, and the persecution finished for the Catholics. But, you know, the front went west, and then the German, also the Wehrmacht people, the generals or the administrators, they said, yeah, you are Germans, you belong, and come home, as we say in German, Heim ins Reich, it means back to Germany. But the Soviet army, I do not say the Russian army, that's a big difference. I say the Soviet army, they was faster than the horse cars of the people. They moved west. And they said, no, no, you do belong to our country. Go back, but not in the Ukrainian villages, but they sent them to the Asian part, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, all these countries of the former Soviet Union. And so they were spread everywhere in on the territory of Soviet Union. And later, especially the Germans, not only the German Catholics, but also the Polish Catholics and Ukrainian Catholics. Maybe you know from history, maybe some of your ancestors, they came to the United States from Poland or Ukraine. Maybe you know that Poland and Russia had many conflicts, political conflicts, and they didn't like each other. I presume that's still the case, more or less. And so they were banished too, because the Polish population was completely Catholic, more or less. The Ukrainians, you know, half Orthodox, but especially in the western part of Ukraine, the majority was Catholic. And as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, the Ukrainians, they had the same mass rite as the Russians, the Orthodox people, but they were only united with Rome. They were completely Catholic, as we are. And the persecution was strong, and they sent them, and they were banished too. But that's interesting. The God's providence, maybe, or how you want to explain that, I'm sure it is God's providence. They were everywhere where the Germans were. They tried to keep, or where the Catholics were, excuse me, not only the Germans. They tried to keep the faith. And for instance, my mother, as a small girl, she was exiled with her family to the Ural Mountains. This is the border between Asia and Europe. And then later they moved to Kazakhstan, and my father came to one town in central Kazakhstan as a young boy, as a teenager. So he was 11, 12 when they were sent to Kazakhstan, and they could not move from one county to the other. And then later, when this law, when they got the freedom to move, they have heard, it's interesting, we have heard, in this town there is a Catholic priest. And they began to think, can we move there or not? And as I know from the history of my parents, they tried to keep what they are. They tried to keep the German identity and the Catholic identity. And also the Polish people, they tried to keep the Polish identity and the Catholic faith, and the Ukrainians and all other Catholics too. So they moved. They moved in the mid-50s to a town or to some towns where were Catholic priests. As I mentioned, they were exiled too. And these priests, they were, I would say, big confessors and martyrs. They have suffered very much. And those priests, they survived. They walked. They have not been paid for their priest walk. They had to walk in coal mines or as night watchers. Or I knew one priest. He walked as a driver on an emergency car. In the free time, they walked as priests. And this was late night, late evening, and in the night. And this priest have formed us. This I can confess. And then later, the persecution continued. In the 50s, there were some different waves, but generally is to say, and now I want to explain what I have heard, what I have seen as a teenager, as a boy. I was born in 1965, and I can tell you only confess what I have heard, what I have seen. Officially, the practice of religion was completely forbidden. In the school, we got the atheistic education. We have heard all the ideas how strange religion is, that God does not exist, that you are crazy when you believe in God, and so on and so on. But we knew this is a big lie. Politically and concerning the religion, we didn't believe. But we lived in the country and we had to know the rules to survive. And so, especially in the school, it was extremely dangerous when the teachers, they heard, they knew that you are a faithful, that you believe in God. And it depended then on the teachers, what they have done. Some of the teachers, they were not so strict. They have seen usually the Catholics, the Christians, they were a little bit better. They had a better manner. They were not criminals. And so they said, okay, no danger from them. Let them be what they are. But they tried to convince the people, the children, to lose the faith. And it was difficult. And nobody wanted to say that he believes in God. And yes, I remember I had one once. There is an organization of the from the Communist Party, the youth organization called Komsomol, and I tried not to become a member of them. And then when I finished, graduated in the school, my parents, they said to me, go to university, learn, study something. We had not the chance. You children, you have now the chance. Go and learn. But my poor parents, they didn't know that I didn't want to go there. I had other plans, this one. And but I was young and weak, and I went and I had to pass exams. But when I brought all my documents from the school and my curriculum vitae and my pictures, there was one young student. She opened my papers and she has seen that I was not a member of this youth organization, and she was so surprised that she couldn't believe that somebody who is not a member of this youth organization tries to become a student on the university. No? But it shows us they tried to prevent that the youth come in contact with religion. And the only way to keep the religion was the family, the Catholic family. And we all, they kept the faith, the Catholic faith. We have to say many thanks to our parents, especially to our grandparents. They were for us priests, catechets, and all. From them we got the Catholic education. My uncle, he was a teacher. He's now retired. He's living in Germany too. And my dear uncle was a teacher of mathematics and physics. And when I have now a problem with something, I ask him how can I manage this technique, the electronic, and he is the expert. And he was a teacher. And then we had not in that time the church. And then later, or maybe I will explain that later, so you will understand that better. Okay, in the schools it was dangerous when the people, the teachers, they knew that you are a Catholic. And when I was in the ninth grade, they asked me directly, and I gave an answer yes, and I had a big fear. But thanks to these both teachers, these both women, they understood for me no danger, so they were simply prudent and they let me be. My cousin, he got troubles from his teacher, and then later when he graduated, his teacher, the lady, she met his mother, and she has understood what she has done, and she has asked him for forgiveness. So I met all the communists, members of the Communist Party. They had moral principles independent of that they were atheists. But sometimes there do exist some sayings in the Russian language. And later when I read the Holy Bible, the New Testament, I have seen, wow, that's a communist slogan, but that's from the Holy Scripture. They have stolen it simply, yeah? And have said that would be something communist wisdom, but it was not communist wisdom, it was simply Christian wisdom. Yes, in the companies where my parents worked or other adults, it was not so bad. When they knew you go to the church or you practice, you pray, it was not so bad, because there, but especially the teachers or in the schools, it was stronger. Now I want to say a word about our priests. In that time, they were big confessors, no? And I hope you understand what I say, no? My pronunciation is a little bit complicated for your ears, but I hope you understand that. And these priests, they had it hard. These were those priests, they survived the exile, they worked, and they became then older. They lived from the support of the faithful. And the masses, they have been said always in private houses. And many of these priests, they have been in prison. And I have heard one story, one real story, true story, about one priest. I met him and I knew him. He was an older priest, Father Alexander Hira, from he was half Hungarian and half German. And he was director of the seminary in West Ukraine, and when the communists came and occupied the western part of Ukraine, where the Catholics were a majority in 1945-46. The diocesan bishop had to go in exile to any western country, and he has consecrated him a bishop, but not in a church, not in a private house, but I don't know the word, but where the animals are, yeah? So he has consecrated him bishop, and we had him a long time as priest, and we didn't know that he was a bishop too. And I heard one story. He said the mass in one house, and the police came and entered, and he escaped on the backside. Yeah, and it was a question of 5 seconds, maybe only. He escaped, because it was forbidden for them to say Mass and to teach the people to practice the faith. But they have done that, and they have been in the prisons. They got free. They have told them, pay attention, when we will catch you, you will get to prison again. But nevertheless, they continue to work. And I was baptized by a Polish priest, Father Ladislaus Bukowinski. And he has baptized me in our house, in a private room, in the living room. And he was strict. He heard that the Riesling family got a son, and he made the decision. It was on Monday, and he said, on Thursday I come, I will baptize this boy. He came on Thursday. Okay, you believe that I had no remembrance on that, but I believe what my parents said. And he said, okay, when he saw me, I was a little bit too fast, also I had the desire to be born a little bit faster than I should, so I was a little bit smaller than usually the children are after 9 months. I was about 7.5-8 months, and when he saw me, he was so he hurried, he made the ceremonies of the baptism very quickly. He was in fear I would die. So, but you see, I survived. No? God thanks. And then later, the first communion, they were forbidden, no? To teach us. And we had lessons by an elder lady, and they were all instructed by the priests how to teach the children. I don't remember exactly. I was 8 years young and that time, but it was funny. I have remembrance. It was a special event for us. In the morning, 4 o'clock, the bells, the clock rang. At 5 o'clock, we had the mass on Sunday morning, and my father had a motorcycle, and we traveled to another part of town. It was one house. 5 o'clock, the mass in the morning began. Everybody has slept, and that was our favor. They have not heard that there are a crowd of people. They come. It's strange, no, when they would say. And he has checked our knowledge after the lessons, and then we had the first communion. When we had mass, it was in our private room. It was a real ceremony. He came in the evening. But we have been five members of the family, my grandmother, my parents, my small dear sister, and I myself, and only two small rooms. This was the living condition in Soviet Union, but that was normal for all people, more or less. And then he came in the late evening, and we have prepared the altar, but it was not the altar like upstairs here. It was not the altar like in a small chapel. There were some boxes, some linen on the table, and any cross. But that was for us a cathedral. And we knew that is something special. And in our apartment, this Father Bukowinski came maybe 3-4 times a year. It was a real event for us. But it was a ceremony. He came. First, he heard confessions. He was hearing confessions, and it some time passed. From the relation were invited, and we have been maybe 15 or 20 persons in one room. In one room. The second one was the confessional room, and I know there one story, one funny story. My dear father, he was maybe at that time younger than I am now, and he went to confession, and he didn't come out for a long time. And finally, all people became nervous. The time flies, no? It's late evening. And then he came out, and one of his cousins, she asked him, what have you done so long there? Have you so many sins? And he said, no, I finished quickly. But what have you done? But the father has asked me about sport. I would recommend everybody, and I would never ask you in a confessional about sport results. It would be strange, but for them it was not strange. I understand the situation completely. They had, especially the priest, a hard life. They were persecution. They knew every day, you know what I mean. And then the priests, they are men too. They are people, they are human persons too. They need to relax, they need something, and they need somebody to speak. And so there was a young man, and I know that Father Bukovinsky loved especially football, because in 1974 the Poland team became the third on the World Cup in Germany, where the Germans became world champions that year. But he has asked my father about the results. I understand that completely. And then when the mass began, when all confessions finished any time in the late evening, he explained us, he gave us some advice, some explanations about the Holy Mass. And I remember he said the Mass, it consists of three parts. The first part are the prayers, the epistle and the gospel and the sermon. The second part is the offertory, or the sacrifice of the Mass. And the third part is the distribution of the Holy Communion. But don't believe that this priest had all liturgical vestments for the Mass. They were dressed always in a shirt and a jacket. No? They have never used the cassock or the clergyman shirt. It was a time of persecution. And then they came and they said the Mass in a surplice and a stole. That was all. Later, when I saw the chasuble and the alb and all other liturgical stuff, I was a little bit surprised, because I have never seen that before. Our priests in that time have never used that. It was simply not possible. And the Mass began, and then in the evening after the Mass, yes, it was again a ceremony. It was clear. The father, he eats alone. My grandmother, my father, they prepared the dinner for him, and he has eaten alone in the second room. We have eaten in the kitchen, and then he came out, and my father has prepared all newspapers about politics, about sport, and so on. And a discussion began between two men, and we children, it was forbidden for us to participate because we were too young, of course. And then the father has spent the night in our house, in our apartment. We had not a house, apartment. My poor small sister, she was 2-3 years, and she liked her bed. But this bed was in the room where the father has slept. And she cried, I want to go to my bed, but the poor father, he heard that. But what could he do? And in the early morning he left, and maybe next evening he was anywhere else in another family's house, repeating the same story, the Mass, confessions, and so on. And these priests, I say this is great what they have done. But it's interesting, I have been about almost 2 years ago in Krakow in Poland, and then I entered one church, and there was an announcement, let us have a Mass for the father Ladislaus Bukovinsky, new rite Mass, of course. because a process of beatification began in Rome, and I guess I should now inform them in Vatican that he has baptized me, and I can imagine that they will cancel the process of beatification. Okay, these are suggestions. I don't know what will happen. But then later, this period, this father died in 1974 in December. He was 70 years young or old, and he was sick. The difficult life, the hard life, the illness and so on. And then we had other priests too. I know one, Father Joseph. We said, Pater Joseph, we have never known the family names of the priests. We knew only the first name, and we called them by the Latin version, Pater. And he said Mass, and my uncle, I have mentioned him, he was a teacher. And then since 1977, we had a Lithuanian Jesuit priest, and he came free for mission in the Asian part to Kazakhstan. But unfortunately, he began to cooperate with the government. He has, I'm sure, has never said them, told them the secrets of the confessions, of course. But he got the permission that we could establish a church. We had a church, an old house. It was an old house, and we put an altar there, and it was so crowded. Once I lost my, I would say, I was young, I was a teenager, and it became dark before my eyes, and one oldest server, mass server, he kept me and he brought me outside. I needed simply fresh air. I was young. So crowded it was. And unfortunately, this father introduced the new mass. And unfortunately, for about 6 years, I was a server in the new mass. But we didn't know anything about that. We heard from our grandmothers, that's wrong. That's not the same how our old priest have said the mass. But this priest was a little bit younger. He was about 50, 52 in that time. And then he was a Jesuit. Oh, the Holy Father, oh, the Holy Father. And then later, when I was ordained, as Father Anaya mentioned, in 1989, it was a big surprise he could participate. I have invited him pro forma. I have never thought that he would be able to come from Kazakhstan to Germany for my ordination. But 3 days before my ordination on Wednesday, I got a letter from him. Yes, I was in Rome. Now I'm in Germany. When I can, I will come and attend your ordination. He was there, and my bishop, Bishop Stork, we had a problem. How should we treat him? He said the new mass. But he was ordained 1950, and he knew the old rite mass. He said this mass longer than 20 years. But we said, okay, you don't get surplice, you are simply a private person, you do not participate on the ceremony. But 11 days later, 12 days later, that was the famous November 9th, 1989, when the Berlin Wall crashed or fell down. And that day he was in Munich, he has visited me again, and we had a big discussion about 5 or 6 hours in my room there in the seminary in our house where we had the chapel in Munich. And he said, for instance, one sentence, he said, oh yes, when you would be more people, you could have right. But it shows me his heart set him. That's right. That's the same what I had. On the day of my ordination, he has spoken to the people. It's great. My ordination was the same. The new rite ordinations. He didn't finish the sentence. but I have understood what he wanted to say. But he said, I have to believe, I have to be obedient. But in his heart he was feeling that's not correct. And yes, but he's now in eternity, and may God repeat him or give him, repay him all he has done good. And I'm thankful him for his sermons, and from the human side he has helped me much to find my priest vocation. But we faithful, we Catholics, we kept faithful. We didn't know anything about modernism. The veneration or the devotion was big. Unfortunately, the sacraments were invalid, but I'm sure our Lord in heaven has known our desire in that time, because we have not been responsible for that. And then later, when he had this church, the people, they have built it by their own hands. No one cent has been given by the government, of course, but because of his cooperation of this Jesuit father with the government, he got the permission. In other towns, in our other cities, we heard that the persecution was still active. And when you would ask me, somebody has asked me yesterday if I was persecuted, I would say no. Explain me, please, how do you make a definition? What is your definition of persecution? If you say the persecution means the Secret Service was listening, you has put the microphones in your room, I would say no. We simply knew what are the rules of our life as Catholics, and we had to observe them. And but then we had the church. This priest has cooperated and with the government and said the new mass, but we had the church. But my dear uncle, I will remember him again, he was teacher in the same part of the city where we lived, and his rector came and said, Mr. so and so, go to the church, take a pen with you and a paper, and make notices who of our students are attending mass there. But his own nephew was there and his own son was there. But we lived in a completely different, in the other side of the town. It was a big one, 600,000 inhabitants, the second largest city in Kazakhstan, called Karaganda. There were always priests, as I say. They came there after they were banished or exiled, and they worked there. And the people, they moved to Karaganda because they knew there are Germans or Ukrainians or Polish people, so we can keep our identity, and there are priests. That was the reason. And he had to find out a Solomonic answer. I don't know what I would have answered. And he asked answered to his director, and he said, okay, I will go there when my mother will give me the permission. But he knew his mother will never give the permission, because his mother was there too. And so it was a Solomonic answer. But this, my dear uncle, when they would found out that he believes in God and he is a teacher, immediately they would kick him out immediately from the school. It was very dangerous. So he was attending the mass in a private room of a priest, of this Father Joseph, Ukrainian Byzantine Rite priest. And the mass began 4 a.m. in the morning, when all people slept. And this Father Joseph, once we had to walk in the school to clean on Sunday, on one Sunday, the streets from the school. I couldn't say, I don't want, I want to go to the church. It wasn't possible. But what to do. So I have accompanied my father, my uncle, and this priest, he had only one room apartment, and it was his living room, it was his restroom, or all. He lived in one room, and he had the altar, and so he said a mass 4 o'clock in the morning, as long as all people slept, and then he went to the church, as I said, since 1977, and he said the mass there for the Catholics, the Roman Rite, for the Ukrainian Catholics in the Byzantine Rite, and I don't know, maybe you have some questions. I will be happy to give answers concerning this topic. Yes, maybe one word more. We had a big veneration for our priests. It was impossible to say good morning. It's not a critique. Please understand me right. I say good morning too. But in that time, in this country, we said always praise be Jesus Christ, and we have always kissed the hands of the priest. And then, one good day, I was in a store in the town, and I met our priest there. He was dressed, of course, in a jacket, in a shirt, like the sirs are here, and I had a problem. How should I greet him? He was accompanied by any person I have never seen. I didn't know, is that a Catholic person or not? And I wished to say Gelobt sei Jesus Christus in German, as we used to do, but it was difficult. In a store, there were people, so I couldn't kiss his hand. I was a boy of 15 or 16 years. It was a dilemma for me. So I said silently to him, Gelobt sei Jesus Christus, and he smiled. He understood my problem. He was a prudent man, and he gave me, I don't remember which answer, but he has never said to me, what have you done, because he knew the situation. But this all experience, what I have seen, I would say our dear grandmothers, how could we survive and keep the faith there in this difficult situation? It was difficult, it was not easy. Our grandmothers, they have always prayed. My grandmother, she was my second mother. My mother had to go to work, it was necessary. They couldn't say I keep home, it was a completely different situation, and they have prayed. And all the grandmothers, I know some families, the children, they went to school, the grandchildren, they had to work, but the grandmothers, they have prayed, and we have prayed every Sunday the rosary, and not every day, it was simply not possible, but in that situation it was difficult, and they have helped us. They were our first teachers in religion, and by them we got our Catholic identity. And one word about the persecution of the priests. This Father Alexander, who became a bishop, my father went always to him for confession stands since 1977. Before 1977, it was all in private rooms, as I explained. And once my father said, yes, Father Alexander explained me. I don't know what my father has asked or which sin he has confessed. It doesn't matter for me. I'm not the person who has to ask him that. But he has said from himself that this priest has told him and asked him, can you imagine how often I was feeling the gun here on this place? And then he said another story my father heard from him in the confession. Yes, we are 4 sons, 4 brothers. I became a priest, bishop, my other brother became a priest, and two other brothers, they became atheists. The same parents, the same education. How to explain? Yes, it's difficult to explain, and what important is, it was prayed. It was prayed, and I would say we tried, and especially in that time, I didn't realize that. I was too young. But now, in the present time, when I think about that time, I see how important was the work of those priests, and how hard it was for them, and how we have to pray for them, for they may rest in peace. But I have learned also another point. I'm sure you do remember what His Excellency has told yesterday. We have sometimes not to be extremely strict in some questions. And we had a situation, we had to know the situation and to accept what we had. And this priest, they couldn't use cassocks or chasubles. They said the mass in the surplus and in the stall. And there were a few other questions where we knew we have to adapt the situation and have to try to do the best in the concrete situation we have been. And then another point I would like to mention now here. When I became 17, 18, I had a serious question or considering about my future. And then we heard in Germany, we all wanted to move to Germany to keep our German identity, and we didn't know could we keep our Catholic identity in a country is persecuting Catholicism and religion generally. And then my parents, they fought it for 9 years, and 9 times the government said, no, you won't get the permission. And then we got the permission. And then later, I thought, yes, when we move now to Germany, I have heard the Catholic Church is in Germany weak. There is something wrong. We have heard something about modernism. We have heard something about traditional movement, but we didn't know exactly what that is. And then I, poor sinner, have said, dear lady, our lady, it's your decision. If we should get the permission to go to Germany, it's your decision. We got the permission. We went to Germany. And 2 days ago, we had an ordination of a Russian priest. I think that's God's providence. And we all are weak, but as long as we try to keep to stay Catholics, as we try to keep our Catholic identity, as long as we try and as we pray, we will survive spiritually. And because the grace of God is stronger than the power of the devil, and it's up to us. God is always expecting us and inviting us. It's up to us to say, yes, I will. I try to do my best. And so always this devotion to Our Lady, the will to do the best. And for all these adult people, I didn't understand that in that time. I was simply too young. But today, when I think, how have they tried? They had no perspective. They have lived in one country. They didn't know that Mr. Gorbachev will come and make glasnost and perestroika. The adults, they didn't know that the things will change in the country. They didn't know that they will become one day free to practice their faith. And but they simply continued what they could. And this is maybe comparatively to our situation today. Sometimes we are all asked, or we ask questions, what should come in the future? But you know, our second name is not God. We don't know. It's simply what we can do today. In the present time, we can make decisions today. And when we will make decisions today, according to God's will, to God's commandment, and as long as we will not make wrong compromises, we will survive. And God will provide for that, and He will help us. And they had in that time no future, humanly said, but things change sometimes, and that's our hope and our perspective. As long as we keep faithful, God will help us, because He sees our sincere will, sincere interest, and as long as we pray, we will never lose the future or the perspective for the future. So by this way, I would like to ask you, Father, let me say please the last excuse for the delay, the last sentence. Please let us be united in the prayers. We are all a big Catholic family. It's not important which country we come from, which language we speak. When we are in the Mass, we speak the same language, the language of God. We have the same Mass, and we are Catholic, not German Catholics, not American Catholics, not African Catholics, but Catholics. And please pray for us in Germany. Pray for the Russian Catholics. They will have a hard day. It's now not the topic, but they will have a hard day. Father Alexander Krizov, it will not be difficult. We got just today in the morning an information from Russia. The modernists, they have introduced old Rite Mass, so-called 62 Rite Mass in St. Petersburg. Just a couple of months ago, they said, no, never, never, we don't need that. Now they have heard a priest is ordained. And the ordination took place only, I see, 2 days ago. And the decision was made immediately to contradict us, to destroy our work. And we will promise to pray for you too. And when I say about what I have spoken, I will finish simply by the topic of this Fatima conference. Am I not here who am your mother? I am a witness that that's true, and when we try to do our best, we will see that, and God's grace will fill our hearts, and then we know it makes sense to continue our fight and to go this narrow path. And only a few are walking this path, and it's hard to go, but that's the path to heaven. And God is our consolation, and may our dear lady make intercessions for us in heaven. Amen. In the name of the Father.